I want to thank all of you who are supporting Into the Word financially so that we could have this program on the radio. If there's anyone else out there that the Holy Spirit's prompting to assist in that area, then write down the contact information you'll hear at the end of the program today and send your one-time or ongoing gift of any amount to that address, and it will be used for the radio broadcast fees. Friday, I always try to challenge you to be an active participant in church life. Everyone needs a home congregation, and if you can possibly be there on a regular basis, you need to be worshiping and fellowshipping and serving and praising and praying and encouraging with that body of believers. If you don't have a home congregation or you feel uncomfortable in the one where you're at, then get out there, do your research, find a place, and get plugged in and stay plugged in. If you happen to be in the process of doing all that and are within driving distance of the Elkhart East building, please come. Give us a try as a potential place that you can call home. We are currently looking at the deterioration of the Jewish-Roman relationship, which blows up into the Roman War during which the temple is destroyed. And the reason I'm going over so much of this is because it is misunderstood and misrepresented, typically, as being some sort of unprovoked invasion of Rome against the Jewish people over time, and that Judea and the Jewish people, they were a bunch of, you know, backward, backwater type of individuals that were taken advantage of by these oppressors. And that nothing could be more far from the truth, as you've been hearing as we went through this. The Jewish and Roman people had been allies for a big long time. There were some hiccups in their relationship over time, but it was modified because of changes from the Roman Republic into the Roman Empire. But all the way up to the time of Emperor Claudius, there were pretty decent protections of Jewish religious rights and privileges. It really started falling apart in the later 50s and early 60s when we have some very questionable individuals in leadership positions in Judea. But it was in 66 that it really came to its flashpoint, where Florus, who has been openly using graft against the Jewish people, he is accused by them in front of his boss, his immediate supervisor, Cestius, the legate of Syria. And once that happened, he decided it was time for him to provoke the Jewish people into open rebellion. And so he used certain circumstances which pretty much accomplished that, as we talked about yesterday. When Florus made his official complaint to Cestius that the Jewish people were in open revolt and needed to be put down by strong military force, there was an alternate report, an alternate complaint lodged with Cestius by the high priest, the Sanhedrin, and by Queen Bernice. This is the sister of King Agrippa II. These are the two individuals we saw interact with the Apostle Paul in his story. They are very religious people, and they are also highly placed Roman citizens. They grew up in Rome, in the royal palace, in the royal environment. And so the fact that Queen Bernice was almost killed thanks to Florus probably added a lot of weight to her complaint. And so Legate Cestius sends Tribune Neapolitanus to Judea to investigate. Neapolitanus hooks up with King Agrippa II at Yamnia. He's coming back from Egypt. He was probably coming back specifically for Pentecost, which is only a week or so away. He probably hastened his return once he heard about everything that was going on in Jerusalem. So at Yamnia, Neapolitanus and King Agrippa are approached by a delegation of Jewish leaders who have come down here to basically say, we want to take you back to the holy city and show you what's going on there. And you need to help. In the last part of the second Jewish month, Agrippa and Neapolitanus arrive at Jerusalem. They tour the city, hearing from eyewitnesses. Now, what did they see? They probably saw all the damage that had been done in the upper marketplace area on the northwest side. They probably saw all the debris left over from the street fighting that happened in the new city on the north side of town whenever the two cohorts were trying to force their way to the Tower of Antonia. They heard from people who had lost loved ones. And so the Jewish leadership, along with the high priest, begged King Agrippa and Tribune Neapolitanus to tell Cestius what had been done by this atrocious procurator, Florus. And so when they had heard all this report, the one leader, the Jewish leader, Agrippa, because Neapolitanus had gone back to Syria to make his report, King Agrippa got all of the Jewish people together, and he did this in a big public area that's on the west side of town, just below the Hasmonean Palace. And he has this big, long speech that he makes, which Josephus records, and you should read it for yourself. It's quite interesting. And he basically tells them, I know that Florus has done these things, but you can't even begin to imagine that somehow you can take on Rome. Now, they said, we're not trying to take on Rome, we're trying to take on Florus. And he says, Florus represents Rome. And so you cannot take on Rome and win. And so what you have to do is do the right thing in your relationship with Rome. Because these are two things that you've done that can't just be passed over unless you fix it. Number one, you tore down the security bridges that connect the Tower of Antonia with the temple complex. Those bridges are used by the Roman soldiers that patrol the temple complex. So you are interfering with Roman security procedures. You need to repair those bridges. And number two, you have stopped in the collection of the annual taxes. There are still 40 talents lacking of what we owe the Roman, of Roman revenues for this year, Roman taxes for this particular year. 40 talents is roughly tens of millions of dollars. And so that needs to be taken care of. So he gave them two assignments: rebuild the broken down bridges and get out there and collect the deficient taxes. Because by doing those two things, we can prove that we are wanting to continue the relationship with Rome. And so they did. They got all those things done. Now, weirdly enough, though, Josephus says that when King Agrippa addressed them again later, the rebellious elements, the ones that, you know, for a while they've been kind of promoting the political idea of independence from Rome. Some of them are Herodians. They want to go back to having a Herodian king rather than a Roman procurator. Others want full independence underneath the Sanhedrin. They don't want to pay any taxes to Rome. They want to be fully independent. And recently, some of those groups have been using terroristic methods in order to promote those ideas. Well, some of those types of elements, the next time that King Agrippa opened his mouth with this idea that we need to maintain the status quo with Rome, we need to be good Roman allies, they tried to stone him and chase him out of the temple where he was making this address. And then they actually chased him out of the city of Jerusalem, sent him packing back to his kingdom up north of the Sea of Galilee. Now, Josephus, interestingly enough, who is alive and quite prominent in Jewish priestly circles at this time, he was at Jerusalem, and he has been also arguing for the status quo. He's been arguing pro-Roman, that we need to maintain our alliance. We need to do what is right to keep this relationship going. I think once these anti-Roman elements started flexing their muscles and even chased King Agrippa out of town, Josephus says in his life, this is his own autobiography, if you will, he said that he began keeping his opinions to himself because it had started becoming dangerous to be a status quo Jew. That brings us then to the fourth month of the Jewish year. So we're now in June of 66. The head of Temple Mount Security, Eleazar ben Ananias, he declares that no more sacrifices are going to be made on behalf of Gentiles. So Gentiles that have come to Jerusalem as part of their experience of traveling in the lower Middle East are no longer allowed to pay for a sacrifice to be made on their behalf. But more significantly, the daily sacrifice made in honor of Nero Caesar, and they've actually been doing this for all of the emperors, all the way back to Augustus, on a daily basis. Eleazar says, no more of that. No more sacrifices for non-Jews. So, Jerusalem for Jews, temple for the Jews only. And the moment he declared that, and he's backed up by an awful lot of the younger priests, the moment they did that, the high priest and the heads of the high priestly families and the members of the Sanhedrin and the key Pharisaic rabbis, so the older rabbis, they assembled the Jewish people back into the court of women again in front of that great bronze gate, right in front of the temple shrine building. And they tried to explain to everyone that barring Gentile offerings was not in keeping with their traditional practices. Now, the insurrectionists in the making refused to listen. And many of the officiating priests were not even bothering to listen. They were busy trying to make war preparations, even inside the temple complex. So, after this failed attempt to overcome this insult to the emperor by not offering a sacrifice for him every single day of the month. The Jewish leadership sent a formal request to Florus down on the coast at Caesarea, and a formal request to King Agrippa II, who is in his kingdom north of the Sea of Galilee, that they should send soldiers immediately to Jerusalem to dislodge by force the Jewish insurrectionists that had taken control of the Temple Mount. So, folks, the Jewish leadership requested the military intervention against the Jewish rebels. That's the truth of the history. It was actually an invoking of the ancient mutual assistance treaty that goes all the way back to Judas Maccabee, that if the Jewish people feel that they are being attacked, that they should be able to appeal to the Romans and get support. Now, Procurator Florus ignored the request, and this is because he wanted the turmoil to get worse, not better, and he didn't want it to end. King Agrippa, though, as Josephus, who becomes his later friend, and so he knows the ins and outs of Agrippa's mind. King Agrippa was hoping that he could still calm things down. He wanted to spare the majority of the people from Roman intervention, and he wanted to spare the Jewish city of Jerusalem and the Jewish temple from any damage that might come during Roman intervention. So he sends about 3,000 of his own horsemen and an unknown number of his soldiers to assist in kicking the insurrectionists off the Temple Mount. During the second full week of the fifth Jewish month, so we're talking about the second half of July here. King Agrippa's soldiers and many of the local Jewish people of Jerusalem tried to take over the upper city. First of all, they secured their control of the upper city, and then they tried to take over the Temple Mount and the lower city where the insurrectionists had dug in. And so there was like a week of hand-to-hand combat between Jews and Jews. The dividing line was basically what we refer to as the Tyropean Valley. This is the valley that goes from the Siloam Pool and then along the western side of the Temple Mount, and then all the way up, honestly, to Golgotha on the north side of town. And so that was kind of the dividing line between the two opposing Jewish forces. On the 14th day of the fifth Jewish month, it was a special day on the Jewish calendar. That's the day that's referred to as the Feast of Woodbringing. It's a ceremonial day where everybody brings a little bit of wood to show that they have a stake in keeping the sacrifices going each and every day of the year. So it's a pretty happy holiday, and everybody comes to the Temple Mount, and they're quite joyful. But on this particular day, the insurrectionists who are anti-Roman won't let anyone onto the Temple Mount if they are a status quo Jew. That is, if they are a Jew that thinks it's okay to maintain a relationship with the Romans. So that brings the fight back to the forefront again, even in the midst of a holiday. So a bunch of the insurrectionists surge across the Tarapean Valley into the upper city. And they're backed up by these Sicari zealots that we've talked about before, the curve knife assassins. And so they go up and they start burning the palaces of the high priest and the palaces of King Agrippa II, the palace of Bernice, Queen of Bernice, and they also burn the Jewish archive building. This was the building where the original indebtedness certificate of any debts was kept on file. And so the purpose that they had was, if we burn everybody's indebted certificates, they'll be glad that they don't have to pay that back, and so they'll be on our side. But they ended up burning the genealogical records as well, which is why an awful lot of the Jewish people of that time period and after could not prove their Jewish descendancy from written records, because they'd been burned by the insurrectionists. The high priest Ananias, who is now seeing that these things are like totally out of control, takes refuge in some part of a waterwork, an aqueduct or something related to the pooling of the water carried by the aqueducts. And he hides out, thinking that if they catch him, they'll kill him. On the following day, the 15th day of the fifth month, the insurrectionists besieged the Tower of Antonia. And then the insurrectionists, after 2 days, took control of the Tower of Antonia from the cohort of Roman soldiers that were there. But it wasn't just Roman soldiers. There were Herodian soldiers in there as well, and Jewish civilians. So the insurrectionists gave free pass to all the Jews, let them leave the Tower of Antonia. But they killed all the Romans that were in the tower and then set the Tower of Antonia on fire, the interior part of it, many of the flammable buildings. And then they turned around and went and besieged the palace of the Herodians over on the west side of town, where there were still some Roman soldiers. Sometime during this mess, a guy that had the name Menachem, who was the son of the late Judas of Galilee that had caused the trouble back in AD 6, and whose two brothers had been recently killed because they were causing trouble. Menachem got it in his head that he should be the next king of the Jews. So he goes down to the Masada fortress, which was a, it was basically a border fortress. It kept watch on the border with Arabia. And his soldiers lied their way past the guards and then murdered all the Romans there and took control of that fortress. And then he took some of those weapons to go back to Jerusalem as if he were king. So that brings us back to Jerusalem now, before Menachem gets back. The Hasmonean palace, or the Herodian palace, is under besiegement. Menachem's soldiers come and they help take the palace, and they find High Priest Ananias and his brother hiding, and they execute them. And then the Romans that were in that palace retreated back into the towers, the three big towers that are part of that complex, to try to wait until a rescue party can arrive. Now, Menachem, the guy that thinks he's king, he goes up into the palace with great pomp and circumstance, And Eleazar, the temple security head, and his people say, we don't want any type of king. And besides which, they didn't think that he was a good enough guy to boss them around. So the insurrectionists attack Menachem's bunch of insurrectionists and chase them away. And eventually, Menachem is tracked down and executed for trying to be a tyrant. Now, what you should gain from this, and we're kind of settling down and getting set up for our next session when we come back next week, is that a lot of the activity that was going on during this time period is Jew-on-Jew violence. It is Jewish insurrectionist group one against Jewish insurrectionist group two, and then we'll find out there's three and four out there as well. Now, one of the really big things that happens is the blow-up of this war beyond Jerusalem. And so on the sixth day of the sixth month, so we're talking about the middle of August, the Romans that were trapped in the Herodian Towers on the west side of town, they were running out of supplies, and so they offer to surrender and lay down their arms if they can just be given safe passage to leave the Jewish city to the Jewish people. And so they are granted this with great vows made in the name of God, but as soon as they laid down all their weapons, they were murdered by Eleazar, the temple security head's orders. And many of the Jewish people in town objected to this atrocity, and that only brought the wrath of the anti-Roman Jews against the pro-Roman Jews. And we will see that setup being solidified more and more as we continue with this story the next time we come back here.